Could you be loved and be loved?
Could you love and be loved, is it?
I think so. Do you want me to check? Hello and welcome to another episode of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Hi Reza.
Hi Craig.
This is episode 42, I believe.
No, 42 already?
I think so. And we're recording this in the middle of January, after Christmas. You'll probably listen to this at the end of January, at the earliest. So, Reza, Christmas, just a dream now, just, you know,
oh,
in the
yes.
past.
A distant memory.
A distant memory. Did you have a good Christmas with your family?
I did. I had lots of good food. A few drinks, lots of siestas, or naps, if you prefer, in English. And saw relatives.
Very nice.
I believe you had a lot of adventure over Christmas yourself, though.
I was lucky enough to go to Burma, which I had a lovely trip, and met some wonderful people, had some good food, and saw some lots of temples and pagodas.
But no turkey and all the trimmings for you, not in Burma.
No, I had a curry for Christmas dinner. I had a black bean fish curry, which was wonderful.
Spicy?
Very spicy, yeah, and I like it spicy. I like my food hot.
Well,
spicy.
Some like it hot.
They do.
As they say in the film.
If you are a new listener, welcome. If this is your first time with us, I'm Craig, and I'm here with my co-host Reza, and we are going to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. You can find more podcasts at inglespodcast.com, and you can study English free at mansioningles.com. In this episode, infinitives, Reza's going to talk to us about infinitives and vocabulary. We will look at health vocabulary, which was a request from a listener before Christmas, and of course your feedback. But first, let's look at some listener feedback, and our first message is from Marianne, a popular listener and a regular message writer. So hi Marianne. And she says, I've just listened to your last podcast and it's fantastic. Thank you. Your help about pronunciation is really good, because to know the thin differences between the sounds, I think maybe she means the small differences or the slight differences.
Slight,
S-L-I-G-H-T. The slight differences, pequeños. Between the sounds is essential to be able to understand them. Well, we agree, Marianne, and we do focus as often as we can on pronunciation. The other explanations about particular things in all kinds of matters are very useful for me to improve my English. Thanks for your dedication, sharing your time with us.
It's a pleasure.
Unknown listeners, she puts in brackets. Well, you're not unknown listeners. When we do these podcasts, we think of you listeners, and we're talking to you, and we hope we're helping you improve your English. So thank you for your message, Marianne. And another regular listener, Mamin from Biescas, Pyrenees, says, hello, Craig and Reza, here I am again. Always a pleasure to hear from you. Hello. And she says, I'm writing to you two to say thanks again for your podcasts, and especially for your good sense of humour. You're always in a good mood. I love it. You're amazing. And of course, wish you a Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays if you're not a Christmas fan. Thank you. She continues, I would like to ask you for some advice for practicing my writing. I think maybe reading English books is a good way to learn it, but I wonder if you could recommend some books.
Well, that's hard, isn't it?
I was thinking
What type of books? I mean,
exactly.
Do you mean novels or things like that, stories? Because it's a question of personal taste, isn't it?
Yeah, she wants to improve her writing, and I think if you improve your writing for academic purposes, we can be more specific in recommending writing for the first certificate exam, writing for the Cambridge Advanced exam, or for IELTS or university papers. But it's very difficult for us to recommend something specific unless we know what you need to improve, exactly what you're writing for. Mm-hmm. The only thing I can think of to practice writing in general is to go to forums and websites of hobbies you have and things that you're interested in and just write in English on these websites. Write film reviews, for example. Write some short book reviews on Amazon. Any other advice, Rosa, that you can think of?
Well, yeah, she says that she wants to practice her writing, and she says that maybe reading would help. I'm not sure exactly what you mean, Mom. As Craig has just said, he's just recommended some good books about that. But maybe what you're trying to say is like reading novels or reading articles or essays or something like that. Yeah, that would help. Be careful with literature, because in literature you can be very flexible. You can do things which technically break the rules, let's say, but it's literature, so you can do it. For example, don't read Ulysses by James Joyce and think, oh, that's a typical way of writing.
No,
it isn't. Though it's a great book, don't start writing like that. People will think you're crazy.
Or Chaucer. Don't read Chaucer or Shakespeare and think that that's typical English.
Because
it isn't.
They'll think you've come out of a time machine or something. But if it's writing you're wanting to improve through reading, apart from the textbooks Craig suggested, I would say read authentic essays, articles, reviews, whatever it is you're interested in writing, letters, emails.
And if you can be more specific, or if any listener needs to improve their writing for a specific purpose, please let us know, send us an email, and the contact address will be on the website at inglespodcast.com. Send us a message, say exactly what you need to improve your writing for, and we will try to recommend specific books that you could use. Anyway, as you suggest in the podcast, I'd like to tell you about one tradition from the place that I live. That's right. Do you remember before Christmas?
Yes.
We asked people to send in any specific traditions they had where they live.
Yeah.
And this is from all over the north of Aragon. Maybe you know it, but just in case you don't, I'd like to share it with you because it's a nice tradition. It's a drink called poncho. Have you heard of poncho?
I've heard of it, but I'm not quite sure what it is.
Isn't it the one they sell sometimes in a silver bottle? Poncho Caballero? Or something?
Yeah.
Silver bottle? It's a liqueur, isn't it?
I think it's kind of similar to what we might call punch.
Possibly.
Not exactly the same, but punch, P-U-N-C-H, is a drink which is drunk at Christmas as well sometimes, isn't it, in Britain and the UK?
That's right. And Mammon continues, it's made of burned red wine and a lot of fruit. Yeah, sounds like punch. Raisin, cinnamon and sugar and honey. To do it, first you burn the red wine. That's the best part. At home, my partner does it and it's awesome. Nice use of an awesome adjective there, awesome. Because it's like we're doing sorcery. We're doing magic. So if you want to share it with children, you burn the alcohol until there isn't any alcohol. And when you finish burning it, you have to get some dried fruit, frutos secos.
Yes.
She says, peel off some of the orange and lemon, raisin and sugar and honey, and add that to the burned wine. Then you have to let it rest for 24 hours. We usually have it, well, she says we usually take it, but that's a translation from Spanish, tomar. If it's a drink, use the verb to have, Mamin. So we usually have it with Christmas sweets after the meal, and it's a tradition that everybody does in his or her own house, in a big red pan, and share it with his or her guests. In the past, people made it in the fire, al fuego.
Over a fire, I would say, no?
Over a fire, yeah. Over a fire. I hope someday I can share it with you two. Well, we hope
so too.
I mean. Yeah, maybe next Christmas.
Especially these cold days of January up in Aragon. Drinks that warm you up are very, very welcome indeed, I imagine.
Yeah, although I wouldn't probably burn off too much alcohol. I'd like to keep some alcohol in there to keep the heart warm.
It does sound like what we would call punch, doesn't it?
Yeah, or mulled wine. Have you heard of mulled wine?
Yes.
That's drunk warm in cold weather.
Only really at Christmas in Britain, isn't it?
Yes. Thank you for that, Mamin. Grammar, over to you, Reza, with infinitives.
Infinitives, okay. So I'm going to talk about infinitives. That sentence has an infinitive in it, to talk. I'm going to talk about infinitives. Craig, for you, what is an infinitive?
An infinitive is the base form of the verb with to before it.
Okay, can you give me a few examples?
To go, to write, to read, to love, to be, or not to be.
As Shakespeare said,
that is the question.
That's the question.
To drink, to be merry.
So I agree with what you've just said, but what if we took away the word to? What if we said be, drink? What else did you
say? That's,
go,
so eat, that, so that's the base form of the verb without to.
Yeah. Would you accept the word infinitive to describe be, go, eat, etc.
I would. I would, but I would specify that it's the infinitive without to.
Right.
I would specify that.
So you could say that there's really two versions of the infinitive. The infinitive with to and the infinitive without to. Right? You can say to run, that's infinitive, with to. Or you can say run, that's also infinitive, but without to. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Or as you said it, and I prefer the same name that you said, the base form is the infinitive without to.
Although if somebody says to me the infinitive of the verb, I automatically assume that it's with to.
Me as well, yeah. But, you know, some people are not so specific about this. Okay, so that's the first thing. You might think, well, who cares? To run, to travel, to eat, run, travel, to eat, big deal if you say to or what? Ike. Well, no, it does matter because there are certain structures in English which require an infinitive with to, and there are certain structures that require an infinitive without to, or, as Craig said, the base form, infinitive without to. It depends. We'll get to that in a minute. But first of all, Craig.
Yes.
I'm going to start a sentence, and you just finish it any way you like. Okay?
Okay.
I'm going to the bank...
to withdraw some money.
To withdraw some money. He used an infinitive, to withdraw.
The infinitive of purpose.
Aha, infinitive of purpose. Exactly. Why is Craig going to the bank? Why? To withdraw some money. He used an infinitive. Withdraw, by the way, means take out money.
Sacar dinero.
Sacar. He used an infinitive because that's why. Let's have another one. Craig, can you finish this sentence, please? Tomorrow, I want...
to publish a podcast.
To publish, infinitive. After the verb want, if you use a verb... it's going to be in the infinitive. Craig, what about this one? I'm too fat. I really must...
lose weight.
Lose weight.
Or do more exercise. Which is true, by the way.
It's not true. It's not true. He's exaggerating. He looks fine, listeners. He looks fine.
I have a perfect body for podcasting.
One that can't be seen.
One that can't be seen.
Me too. And the face. So he said he really must lose weight or he really must do exercise. Lose or do. The base form or infinitive
without
to. I knew Craig would use an infinitive or base form. With all of those examples, because the structures require it. So there are certain structures that require an infinitive verb if you use a verb. Sometimes you can use a noun. For example, when Craig said, I want to... what did you say?
I want to lose weight. I could have said, I want more chocolate.
Yes.
So I'm not using a verb.
Could be a noun. So I'm not saying that these verbs... want, for example, necessarily require you to use an infinitive. It may be a noun. However, if you use any verb, it must be an infinitive. That's what I'm saying. Okay, so that's a few examples. Now, what about the form of the infinitive? You think, oh, it's easy. It's the version with to. So, correr, to run, or even without to, run. Viajar, to travel. Yeah, that's true. But I'm afraid there's more to it than that. That's the normal, let's say, normal infinitive. But there are other types of infinitive. Craig, the poet Alfred Lord Tennyson.
Oh, yes.
Yes, he once said... Well. Oh, yes. good old Alfred. He said, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all.
That's
do you agree with that sentiment?
Ooh, I'm not sure.
It's a hard question.
It's quite a controversial quotation. I think, yes, it is. I mean, I've had relationships, I've been hurt in the past, but I think looking back, it's better that I had that relationship and knew the person and had that experience, because life's experience. Mm-hmm. So I think it is better to have loved than and to have lost than not never to have loved at all.
So Craig's talking about the past. He's talking about his past in this case, and he's using infinitives. He's using infinitives to talk about his past. He's saying, for him, it is better to have loved. That's what he believes. Even though he lost that love, it's better to have loved and lost, because at least you have the memories. Now, he's using an infinitive to talk about the past. If you're going to do that, have you noticed that I added the word have? It's better to... I didn't say to lose, I said to have lost. And I didn't say to love, I said to have loved. Yeah. I added the word have. To have loved, to have lost. Actually, they're infinitives. They don't look like the normal infinitive, but they're called the perfect infinitive.
Which the have makes it the perfect infinitive.
Think of the present perfect. I have eaten my dinner. We have stopped walking. Have is in the present perfect, usually. Well, could be has, but have is in the present perfect. Perfect infinitive with have. To plus have plus past participle. Or if you want the base form, in other words, the infinitive without to, just take away to. So say have loved and have lost.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the base form.
And we've spoken about this perfect have when we talked about modal verbs in the past. To could have, might have, would have, should have. Putting the modal verb in the past, so it shouldn't be new, completely new to our listeners.
Yes. For example, if we take the modal must, imagine I'm waiting for a person I've never met before called Peter. Someone arrives at the place I expected him to arrive, at the time I expected him to arrive. What do I say? You must be Peter. And he says, yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met Peter before. I say, you must be Peter. Must followed by base form, infinitive without to, be. But what if it's in the past? Well, imagine I said, yesterday I met someone. Oh, really? Who was it? Well, I didn't ask his name, but it must have been Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Because Peter said he was going to meet me. And so I suppose it was Peter. It must have been Peter. We're still using an infinitive or base form. That's infinitive without to, remember. Have been, to have been. Because after must, we always use infinitive without to. And if you want to express that in the past, listeners, that's when you have to use the perfect infinitive. It's not the same to say it must be Peter and it must have been Peter. It must have been means, you're talking about the past. But because I'm required to use an infinitive after must, to express that it's past, I use the perfect infinitive, have been.
And it's so hard to hear sometimes the pronunciation of that perfect have when it's connected to something like a modal verb, because it's not must have, it's must have.
Exactly.
It must have been Peter.
That.
It must have been Peter. Very difficult to hear in connected speech. It must have been Peter.
Yeah. Craig, active and passive. We've been talking so far about active infinitives. I'm going to say an active infinitive. You tell me the passive. Okay.
Ooh, okay.
To eat.
To be eaten.
Mm-hmm. To call.
To be called.
Here's a tricky one.
I'm trying to catch Craig,
and all the listeners go, oh, what? What's this creation? To bear?
To be born.
Ah, you can't catch Craig out. He's too sharp.
I was born.
Aha. A very, very common word. I was born in Belfast. Born is the past participle of bear.
Mm-hmm.
You don't often hear the infinitive active to bear. Yeah. You don't often hear, she is going to bear a baby, but you could say it. But we normally say, a baby is going to be born.
And a big mistake made by Spanish speakers is when they use born as a normal verb and they say, I born in Madrid.
It's not, it's I was born.
I was born.
By my mother.
By my mother, but we don't say by my mother because it's obvious.
Yeah. Who else is going to do it?
It's not your dad, is it? It's going to be your mother.
And it's not the man down the street. So I was born is passive. So the reason I'm getting into all this is to show you that to be born is an infinitive, but it's passive. It's not to born, doesn't exist. To be born. The passive infinitive is to plus be plus past participle. Or if you want the base form, take away to. Be born, be eaten, be called.
Where were you born?
I was born in a place called Lisburn in Northern Ireland. Not Lisbon, so many people say to Portugal?
Not in Portugal.
No, it happens a lot. Lisbon, what, you're Portuguese? No, Lisburn, Lisburn.
Mm-hmm. Is that far from Belfast?
It's about 10 miles away.
Oh, pretty close.
What about you? Where were you born?
I was born in Twickenham. In London, yeah. And shortly after, we moved to North London, to North East London, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get on with these infinitives. So far, we've had the normal infinitive. We've had the perfect infinitive. To have eaten, to have run, to have traveled. And now we've got the passive, to be called, to be eaten, etc. Okay, so just to demonstrate the difference between active infinitive and passive infinitive, everybody knows what is to love. Well, actually, maybe not. We know the word to love. Maybe we don't know how to do it. But everybody knows what to love means, amar. It can also be passive. And in fact, who better than the great Nat King Cole to teach us? Listen to this. The greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
So that's the active and the passive.
Yeah, to love and be loved. What's more, that's a very, very, very wise thing.
And a lovely song. So
Craig and I can teach you many things, listeners, but we can't teach you anything more useful than that, I'm afraid.
Love and be loved in return.
In return, the active, then the passive. Okay, so far so good. What about this, Craig? To be lying on a beach right now, that's what I want to be doing. To be lying on a beach right now. To be lying on a beach. To be lying.
Drinking a nice cocktail.
Yeah.
Mixed by a beautiful girl.
Yeah. Drinking a cocktail, lying on the beach. To be lying on the beach. To be lying. What do you make of that grammar? To be lying on a beach. Tumbado. Estar tumbado.
Yeah. Estar tumbado. To be lying. It's a present participle, isn't it?
The word lying is lying. The present participle. It's the continuous or progressive infinitive. To be lying. To be eating. To be running. To be calling. To be traveling. To be jogging. To be drinking. It's an infinitive. It begins with to, right? If a verb begins with to, it's infinitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure, right? To. And then it's followed by be. And it's followed by ing, as you said, the present participle. To be plus ing, continuous or progressive infinitive.
Infinitive.
So, as we already said, listeners, if you recall, I want, followed by infinitive, I want to visit my friend tomorrow. Okay, to visit, fine. But I want to be lying on a beach right now. I've got to use the progressive infinitive if I want to talk about things happening now, or not necessarily now, but in progress. In progress. It could be for the past. I could use a progressive infinitive for the past. For example, yesterday at 5 o'clock, I wanted to be lying on the beach, but I was doing my homework. But what I wanted yesterday, I wanted to be lying on a beach.
So if I said to you, I would rather be drinking a cocktail in Cuba than recording this podcast. That would be...
You're using the continuous infinitive
without two.
Sorry.
Yes, without two.
I
would rather, plus the infinitive without two. So I would rather be drinking a pina colada than recording this podcast.
Exactly. And isn't it true, Craig?
Isn't it true?
Yeah. Well, actually, no. Can I combine the two? I would like to be drinking a pina colada on a beach in Cuba.
Recording the podcast.
Now, there's the perfect mixture.
That's right.
Yeah. So we got there the continuous infinitive. Craig, I could tell the listeners a lot more about infinitives, and I need to, but I think that's probably enough for now.
I think we could save the more infinitives and more information for a later podcast because we don't want to overload our listeners with too much information. I'd like to move on to vocabulary and speak a little about health. Now, this comes from an email that we received before Christmas last year, at the end of last year, and I can't remember who asked us. But one of our listeners wrote in and said, please, could you speak a little about health and the health service and vocabulary connected to health? So let's begin with some vocabulary. A very useful expression is GP, which many Spanish students may not know, because médico de cabecera, your family doctor, is commonly called GP in the UK, which stands for general practitioner. It's a person who has knowledge of general medicine.
Very often we use that word practitioner for a medical specialist, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
They practice medicine.
Yeah, practice medicine, which makes me laugh because I tend to think if they're practicing it, then they're not good at it yet. They're trying to improve, like you practice your English.
But that's not what it really is.
They're practicing medicine. Maybe one day they'll be good at it. It makes me very nervous. If you want to see your GP or your dentist, you make an appointment. Pedir una cita. You make an appointment.
You make an appointment and they an appointment to you.
They give you an appointment. They give you an appointment. And a confusion arises with the English word for una revisión, when you go to the doctor for a...
Checkup.
But it's not the same if you take your car in for a a checkup. Because revisión del coche in English is a service. You take your car for a service, a yearly service, or a 10,000-kilometre service. So it's checkup. A phrasal verb for the doctor or the dentist or the optician and a service for a car.
As well as check up, we often use the word check, like, for example, I'm going to have my hearing checked or my eyes checked. Or you can say tested, right?
Yeah.
My eyes tested, my hearing tested, my reflexes tested. What are reflexes, Craig?
Reflexes are... how quickly your body reacts to something. For example, if they hit your knee with a hammer, your knee jerks up, it moves quickly. That's your reflex, your reflexes. If you need medicine from the doctor, he or she will give you a prescription, una receta, which is not the same when you're cooking food. It's not... a recipe is for food and a prescription is from your doctor.
Craig, can I tell you a bit of information about prescriptions in the United Kingdom, which maybe you didn't even know?
Do you have to pay for a prescription in the
UK? That's exactly what I was going to talk about. This might sicken you. Sicken means pues hacerte sentir celoso o mal. Do you have to pay? Yes or no? What do you think?
Well, I know in Spain, I think you pay 10%, is it? Or you pay a percentage of the price of the medicine. So I would guess, not having lived in the UK for many years, I would guess that you don't pay full price if you pay National Health, if you pay insurance. But you probably pay a percentage of the cost. I don't know how much.
As far as I know, it's not a percentage. And it never has been. It's just a fixed price.
Really?
And right at the minute, I don't know what it is. So
it doesn't matter how expensive the medicine is. It's the same price.
Let's invent a figure. Let's say it's £10. I don't know what it is. But the doctor prescribes, that's the verb, prescribes you a little box of aspirin. If you're going to get it with your prescription, £10.
Mm-hmm.
If the doctor prescribes you the most expensive drug ever invented in the history of medicine, which really costs £2,000 to produce, it will cost you £10.
Wow. Wow. So if you have a severe disease like cancer, for example, I know cancer medication is very, very expensive, then you're only paying £10 for it. But
if it's a prescription, yes.
But if you only have a headache, dolor de cabeza, headache or an earache, then you're paying a lot for the medicine you need.
Yes, and very often GPs say to people, look, I could give you a prescription for what you need, but it's better just to buy it privately because it will be cheaper.
Do you think that's fair?
No, but I'll tell you what's even less fair if you're English, but not if you're Northern Irish. In Northern Ireland, all prescriptions are free. I'm talking about just England because it's autonomous. In Northern Ireland, and I believe Scotland as well, if I'm not mistaken, but Northern Ireland for sure, the autonomous government decided that all prescriptions are free, whereas in England they didn't. So they're different systems.
So if you're in bad health, if you are poorly or sick, we suggest you go and live in Northern Ireland. Well, it's cheaper.
Or possibly Scotland,
Or possibly Scotland.
Not England.
You'd suffer with the cold, but you wouldn't pay anything for your medicine.
Yeah.
And what would you call, Reza, the place where you would get your medicine? Where do you take your prescription from the doctor? Where do you take it to get your medicine?
Well, I would normally say the chemists.
Me too.
What might an American say?
An American might say pharmacy, which you could, I think, use in British English too.
Yeah.
For example, there's a famous pharmacy in the UK called Boots. B-O-O-T-S, and it's Boots the Pharmacist. No, it's Boots the Chemist.
Boots the Chemist.
It's Boots the Chemist. But it would also be called a pharmacy. But in the US, they have another word which is quite American, drugstore.
Yeah.
Which makes me laugh because I'd expect to go there and buy heroin and cocaine and marijuana. But no, drugstore. Medical drugs can be bought in the US in a drugstore. Other expressions, take a pill. Pill is pastilla. You can also take your blood pressure, which is tensión de sangre, or get your blood pressure taken, or have your blood pressure taken by a nurse. And be careful of the pronunciation of two words, blood. It's not blood, it's blood. The sound, the vowel sound is a, like up, blood. And also the pronunciation of nurse. The vowel sound is like turn or burn, nurse.
Another confusion I think which is common, Craig, is the verb. How do you say sangrar?
To bleed.
Yes.
Bleed.
People often confuse to bleed and blood.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Words for not being well, expressions you could say, I'm sick, I don't feel well, I'm ill, I-double-L, to be ill or to be sick, I'm not well, I'm under the weather. I'm feeling under the weather. I'm not 100%.
You said, Craig, to be sick. Okay. For example, I have a cold. Estoy resfriado. I am sick. Estoy mal. Estoy malito. But what if I said to you, I ate some bad food and I have been sick? What does that mean?
I've been sick is I've vomited.
Right.
Vomitar, to vomit.
So to be sick can also be to vomit, right?
Yeah, you can feel sick, which is estar enfermo, and you can be sick, which is also estar enfermo, but also physically to vomit. And there's a phrasal verb for vomiting. Do you know what I'm thinking of?
To throw up.
To throw up. To throw up your dinner is to vomit your food. Throw up. Other useful words we may come across, to the opposite of being sick is to be well, to be healthy, or to be in good health, using the noun in an expression, in good health. So how are you? How are you keeping? I'm fine. I'm well, thank you, etc. This time of year, it's very common to get a cold or to catch a cold, to catch a bad cold, or to come down with a cold. To come down with means to catch or to get a cold. Rest for the other.
That's a phrasal verb with two prepositions, to come down with.
Exactly. A multi-prepositional phrasal verb, to go down with the flu, gripe. Yeah.
You said to go down with. It can be to come or to go.
It can be to come or to go, can't it? Yeah.
Right,
yep. I've gone down with a flu, or he's come down with a flu.
Yep.
And the opposite, to recover, there's another useful phrasal verb, to get over. So you get over a cold, or you can get over the flu.
Now, Craig, a question I'm often asked in class is the difference between disease and sickness or illness. Are they the same? Are they different? Does it depend? What do you reckon?
That's a good question.
Well, first of all, what is disease? A disease?
Disease is
enfermedad.
Enfermedad.
Right? But then sickness or illness is also enfermedad. And in fact, sometimes they're interchangeable, but not always.
But not always. Isn't it that a disease could suggest to me that it's more serious and maybe even have a name, like AIDS as a disease or cancer as a disease? But you could be sick without necessarily having anything serious.
If you have a cold, it's not a disease.
No, but you're off sick.
And it is a sickness, it's an illness.
Yeah.
But it's not a disease.
Yeah.
However, cancer, serious thing, you can call it a disease, but you can also call it a sickness or illness.
Correct.
It's a serious sickness or illness. So for me, a disease is either a serious sickness or illness or a long term, de largo plazo.
Mm-hmm.
Long term, like for example arthritis or something like that, you know, el arthritis, something that you're going to have for a long time, that's a disease.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not so serious in this case, but it's long term. Or it could be something very serious, like pneumonia. Yeah.
Yes. Sneeze and cough, the difference. Well, cough is toser, it's a verb and a noun. I have a cough. I'm coughing. Be careful of the spelling. It's C-O-U-G-H. The pronunciation is cough. Cough. And to sneeze, estornudar.
Craig, what do you do when someone sneezes? Let's see, I'm going to sneeze. Ach.
Bless you.
Oh, thank you.
Jesus. You don't say Jesus, do you?
No, not in English.
Bless you if someone sneezes.
Which is really a shortened version of God bless you.
God bless you, my son.
God bless you.
May God go with you.
Que Dios te bendiga. That's what we're really saying.
One word which I liked while I was checking his vocabulary in Spanish, chichón. Do you know what chichón is in English?
A bump.
Yeah, very good. A bump on the head, for example. Yes. I have a bump. Tengo un chichón.
What about bruise?
Moradura, is it?
Yeah.
A bruise?
Bruise.
When you hit your arm or your leg and your skin changes colour, you see the blood under the skin, it goes brown or purple or red. It's a bruise.
Be careful with the spelling of bruise. B-R-U-I-S-E. Strange one.
But the vowel sound is oo, like you. So it's bruise. Bruise. Rhymes with cruise. Cicatriz.
Scar.
Scar. Scarface.
Can be a noun or a verb.
Like Al Pacino. Bruce. To scar.
Scarface.
Have you got any scars?
Yes, I do. I have a big scar on my right wrist.
What's that from?
My tendon broke. And I'm saying this to impress a couple of friends of mine. In fact, Craig and I would like to dedicate this section of the podcast to Doctors Marta and Jose Enrique. And to their children, Luis and Jose Enrique, as well. As they know, they're students of mine, I have a big scar on my right wrist because I once broke my extensor pollicis longus.
Now, this is an English podcast. Yeah. No Latin allowed. Latin.
Well, as the listeners probably guessed, just like Spanish, many Latin words are used, mainly by doctors.
Yes.
But because it happened to me, I happen to know the word. Extensor pollicis longus is the tendon in your thumb. Mine broke, and as a result, I had an operation, and now I have a big scar.
How old were you when that happened?
I was about 20, 21.
Was it painful?
Extraordinarily painful.
Mm. painful, doloroso, painful. Yeah. Dolor is pain or an ache. Dolor. Mm-hmm. Dolor de cabeza, headache. Dolor de garganta, a sore throat. And that's all I have, I think. There are one or two other expressions and words that I will put in the show notes for any medical students or doctors or nurses or people who are interested in this vocabulary. And if you would like us to speak about any specific vocabulary or themes, please let us know. Send us an email to craig@inglespodcast.com or to reza@belfastreza@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voice message on the website at inglespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can also improve your English with mansioningles.com. Don't miss a podcast episode. You can subscribe to our email newsletter at inglespodcast.com, and we will send you a monthly email of all of our podcast episodes. So, until next episode, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. Bye. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later. So we'll see you a little later in the next episode.
Actually, you'll have to help me out. Is it, there is nothing fairer than to love and be loved in return. Do you know the song? You'll find it in Moulin Rouge, for example.
Could you be loved and be loved? Isn't it Bob Marley?
No, that's an entirely different song, but that'll do.
Could you be loved?
That'll do.
Could you be loved?
I was thinking could of that song. Have you seen the film Moulin Rouge? There is no fairer thing than to love and be loved in return.
Be loved in return. George Benson did a cover version of that. To be loved.
Anyway, let's stick with Bob Marley because at least we know that. What does he mean? Could you be loved?
Could you be loved? And be loved.
Could you love and be loved, is it?
I think so. Do you want me to check?
Yeah, if you don't mind. This is just kind of ad-libbing. And again.
Okay.